Lane bench. There's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
Eckert, put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby!
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It is a Tuesday, February 25th, and we are underway this hour on Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. Flames Talk's available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Text line's open at 960-960 if you're listening live. Hi, Vix.
Hey, buddy. How are we doing?
I'm well. I'm hanging in
there.
It is Tuesday, Feb 25. That is 10 days until the 2025 NHL trade deadline. And we're going to talk a lot about the trade deadline in the next little bit, in the next 10 days. And might as well do that on this Tuesday.
I don't see why not.
I think you and I are on the same page when it comes to the kind of the overall big picture. Like, unless when it comes to big game hunting for the Flames between now and next Friday, unless it's going to be someone under contract, under the age of 25, that type of player that can fit with this group going forward, we don't see them going big hunt game hunting, right? Like, we don't see them going and searching for a 29-year-old rental or a 31-year-old rental, or even a veteran guy still under contract who's in the 30-year-old range. Like, that's not what we see the Flames chasing. In fact, every conversation I've had suggests, yeah, their plan is their plan, and they're not going to deviate from their plan just because they're still in a playoff race like they are right now. That's where I am. I think we're on the same page, right?
Yeah, Craig Conroy doesn't need to be the newsmaker of the 2025 NHL trade deadline. You don't need to go big game hunting. You certainly don't need to be bringing in players that are either nearing 30 or over 30 that are pending unrestricted free agents that are going to cost you significant assets, whether that's picks, whether that's prospects, whether that's a combination of both. If there's a hockey trade to be made, absolutely. And specifically, if there's a hockey trade to be made where you're bringing back, I'll even extend that. Like, the age range for me is 23 to 26. That would be the window I'd be like, especially if it's a center, especially if it's a right shot center.
Mine's like 21 to 25.
So we're in the right ballpark. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not gonna shun Craig Conroy for getting a 21-year-old. That's not what I'm saying with my age ranges. I'm just saying typically the guys that are 21, 22 are going to cost you significantly more. You're looking for those market inefficiency types that we saw. Kevin Ball, Yegor Sharangovich, I think to an extent, Farabee and Frost. Those are the kinds of trades that I feel the Flames should be making at the deadline if they become available, not chasing a massive unrestricted free agent at season ends is going to cost you a first, a top prospect, and something off of your roster. To me, that is not what this Calgary Flames team is about right now. It's not where they are in this retool. They're not ready to add a significant impact maker that's going to be earning eight digits next season that, you know, upsets the balance or the trajectory of what they're trying to build and when they're trying to build it for. To me, that's not the approach. The simpler approach, there's a hockey deal that fits your age range and scope, by all means. Anything other than that, I'm not super interested in.
And that was even the main message when you and I got into the conversation about Rantanen on
Gloves
Monday.
Off, yeah.
Like, the only way I'd be okay with that is if there's a contract that is on the table and that they'd be able to sign a deal. Otherwise, it would make no sense to go and get to pay the assets you'd need for Rantanen as a rental would make no sense for the Flames right now and where they are.
And I think that's kind of where we even differ. If there was, like, I'd feel better about that move if there was a contract on the table. And I understand the thought process of, you know, this guy is a top three winger and maybe a top 10 forward in the NHL. And difference makers like that don't happen to find themselves on Calgary's roster regularly. So you might want to take a swing. But even in that scenario where there is a contract on the table, that's where you and I differ.
Yes,
right?
I don't think the window
is open for the Flames to be making that kind of move right now. But I do understand the thought process and your approach to these guys don't come available all that often. So if you have a chance, you got to take a swing.
So knowing that we don't expect them to be big game hunting when it comes to rentals, big game hunting, what about a lower impact rental? Like, I think that it is very safe to say the Flames could use another left shot defenseman and definitely could use a bit of an upgrade when it comes to their number four center. And if they're going to go out there and find another center, it's got to be somebody with a right shot. And look, Dylan Cousins is great. I don't know if that's going to happen between... I'm skeptical that'll happen between now and the deadline. But what about a right shot, fourth line center, something like that? A lower impact, kind of more of a tinkering type addition between now and the deadline. What about that as a possibility? Before we get into it, this is Frank Saravalli, who joined us on the first hour of Flames Talk on this Tuesday from Daily Faceoff and dailyfaceoff.com. He gave his thoughts on that potential concept.
I think it's in some ways becoming a bit of a buyer's market. We're 10 days out. We have not seen a lot of the rental pieces move just yet. Not to say that they won't between now and next Friday at 1 p.m. Mountain Time. But in the end, if we're looking at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 12:30 Mountain Time on Friday, March 7th, and some of these names are still on the board and might be going for pennies on the dollar, teams looking to ship guys off their books, a team like the Flames may be looking for a missing piece to try and not put them over the top, but help solidify their position in the standings and give them a chance to compete. Yeah, I could for sure see the Flames and Craig Conroy just checking off players on the list saying, oh, okay, this guy's still available. It's so late. Let me just give a ring and see, hey, what's it going to take to make something like this happen?
Yeah.
But they're not going to be trading significant future assets to do it.
So what about that idea of, I think the two things would be depth defense, left shot, depth center, right shot, fourth line center, right shot. Those types of moves as rentals, would you be okay with the Flames? Would in your opinion, is that something the Flames should be after?
Yeah, honestly, it is, especially if we're talking about a late round pick, anything fifth to seventh, or we're talking about that with a mixture of a C prospect or maybe just a C prospect in and itself. I'm certainly okay with that because I do think there are targets that you can look at that fit both the age scheme and the idea of trying to improve your roster now. And to be perfectly honest, I think the guys in the dressing room have earned at least a little bit of help. I mean, it's not going to be significant. You're not getting a top pairing defenseman as we're talking about, or you're not getting a number one right shot center. You're not going fishing. You're not going, like we've mentioned, big game hunting. But if you can incrementally improve the team, I think it sends a message to the locker room that, hey, we've seen what you're doing. We know where you are in the standings. We know how hard you push. And we want to reinforce the fact that we appreciate your efforts. So we're going to do what we can, still in the scope of our picture of what we're trying to accomplish over the long term, but bolster with a little bit of short-term help as a thank you, as an appreciation note for the battle that you guys have put forth, the effort that you've put forth through the first 59-ish games of the season. I'm perfectly fine with that, especially if we're talking about some discounts being available. As Saravalli mentions, you get later in that day and suddenly prices drop a little bit. And again, you're not giving up a pick in the first four rounds. If you can sacrifice a fifth, a sixth, a seventh, whatever that happens to be, and maybe a prospect that's fallen very deep down your depth chart, because we know the Flames are going to have a lot of picks. We know they had a lot of picks in 2024. Mm-hmm. We know the progression of how that's going to go. So if you can sacrifice very little for a short-term rental, or even a player that maybe you don't have firm designs on after the season, but once you get them under the hood a little bit and you get to see exactly what they are, you may be interested in keeping them around a little bit. I am more than in favor of checking out the market, examining the prices. And if there's a low-cost fit that makes your team better, whether it's pending on restricted free agent or not, I'm okay with that kind of decision from up top.
Here's a couple of interesting names for me at center. Ty Dellandrea and Luke Kunin in San Jose, both right-shot centers, and Sam Lafferty in Buffalo. Those are just three names that come to mind in terms of, those are the three names that come to mind in terms of potential guys on teams that aren't going to make the playoffs that you could go after.
I'm in favor. This is very recency bias, but I am in favor of looking at a player like Ty Dellandrea. He's 24 years old, right shot center, 54.6% at the dot this season. San Jose acquired him in June for a fourth round pick. I don't necessarily think his stock has shot through the roof since then. He hasn't had the most productive of seasons, but again, if you're playing in a fourth line role, offense isn't your primary concern. It's winning those faceoffs if you're him. It's being physical on the forecheck. It's making sure you don't get scored on. He's a player that I would probably move. Again, this is recency bias. Saw him on Sunday. Really liked the game that he had against the Flames. Relatively speaking, of course. It's not like he didn't put forth a Celebrini-type game. Don't get me wrong. I'm not sitting here saying, like, oh, he blew the doors off of everything. I just liked what I saw out of him. Knowing his age, knowing that he shoots right, knowing that he's had success in the faceoff dot, he'd be one of those guys that I would be looking at.
I really like the idea of Dellandrea. I mean, I think that he would actually be more. I don't think you could get him for a fifth and a seventh. I don't think. I mean, he's 24 still. I think he would fit perfectly as a center, you know, depth center with this group going forward. I quite like that idea. I don't mind Luke Kunin either. A little bit more. Like, I don't think Kunin's a fourth line center. I think Dellandrea probably is on a good team going forward. Kunin's a guy who
leads the Sharks with 151 hits this season.
Dellandrea does?
No, Kunin.
Kunin.
So, like, to me, and I've liked Kunin for a while now. I liked him back in Minnesota. I've liked him on the international stage for Team USA. He's 27, so he's still somewhat fits that age range, a little of the on the older side of things, which is why part of me wants to lean more Dellandrea. But Kunin right now, I think, is the better player, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I do too. I think Kunin probably is a number three center on a good team, whereas I think Dellandrea is probably a number four. Lafferty is probably a number four center on most teams as well. And Lafferty's been playing the wing a lot in Buffalo, but we know he can play center. So those are just two guys. Dellandrea and Lafferty would be really interesting targets for me because they do fit the mold of what the Flames are looking for. I'd be quite interested in both those guys in terms of how they could fit for the Flames. I think you'd have to pay more for a guy like Dellandrea than you would for a guy like Lafferty.
Yeah, he's younger and he's got more runway. I don't think he's necessarily finished his development. I don't think he's what he is at this age. 3 or 4 years from now, there might be a little bit more ceiling there. And you go back to junior, where he was a point per game player. He was a captain. He represented Canada at the World Juniors. He'd probably be my number one target. Again, we would be, and this one's a little bit different. When I say going and looking for pending unrestricted free agents or one, he's still 24. There's going to be team control there. There's the age scope, so he fits a little bit better for a player like Dellandrea. I might be willing to cough up a little. Now, at the same time, we're talking about a guy that's destined to be your fourth line center, so I don't know necessarily how much I want to expend in terms of assets, but he feels like everything you would have lost with Schwint and a bit more coming back. So if Schwint was still in the organization, I don't think you necessarily have to look at a Dellandrea to bolster that fourth line. But at the same time, we're talking about a player that hasn't been with the Calgary Flames for almost 6 months now, so that's in the past. Dellandrea fits your age, fits your position, fits your handedness, your dexterity, fits your scheme of what you're trying to do.
And by the way, just I know we're talking about rentals. Neither of those guys would be rentals.
Right.
Both guys have 1 year left on their deals. Dellandrea pending RFA after next season. Lafferty pending UFA. So you'd probably be paying a little bit more for them too, which then that takes me out of the can't be outside the top 100 type. Like, if you had to pay a third and a fifth to bring in a guy like Lafferty, or a little bit more to bring in a guy like Dellandrea, I'd probably be okay with that because, like, I think Dellandrea could be with the Flames for a little while. Lafferty would be here next season as well as a number four center. You're almost certainly moving on from Rooney at the end of this season anyway. I'd be okay with paying a little bit more for one of those two guys. Again, neither of them are rentals. Both of them have contracts for next season.
Yeah, I'd be like, it's no secret that as of Tuesday, February 25th, the two biggest needs the Flames have, outside of a number one center and another top pairing defenseman, is a left shot defenseman, preferably that can play in your top four, but at minimum your top six, and a fourth line right shot center to help one balance out that fourth line, who I thought played their best game in ages against San Jose. But that's one game. And finding that, again, finding that defenseman that if you could put somebody with Uyghur, that's no disrespect to Joel Hanley, but if you could find an actual bona fide top four defenseman, put them in, that might be a little rich for your blood if you're the Calgary Flames looking
don't know
at the deadline.
If those are out there.
That, well, that's the thing. That might be one of those Frost Fairby deals that has to happen in the offseason.
Yeah.
But in the short term, if you could, and depends on what Soloviov might look like on an extended
or
look
Kuznetsov.
As well, or Kuznetsov.
I'm actually more of the, I'm kind of not as, unless you can get somebody that's clearly like Frost or Farabee, but a left side defenseman, it doesn't really make a ton of, as much sense anyway, for them to go and try and acquire, like there's always depth defensemen available, but like you've got depth defensemen, you've got Kuznetsov, you've got Soloviov. I don't think they need to do that to the same extent that maybe a number four center could make. That to me is the biggest glaring need, is a right shot faceoff guy. And if they were to get somebody a little bit lower end than the guys that we mentioned as a rental, where they don't have to, I'd still be okay with that. Like you got to get a right shot in there, if just as an option, if possible, when it comes to faceoffs. That whereas the left side defenseman with Soloviov, with what Hanley's done, with Kuznetsov, I'd be a little less urgent on going to attack that, unless you can get a guy like, of course, if Bowen Byram's available,
yeah,
different
no,
story.
No
right?
question. My question for you would be, if this is a pure rental situation, in that instance, age won't matter, contract won't matter, it's going to be a player that's not with the Flames beyond the end of the season, how much are you willing to pay for that right shot fourth line center? Again, age doesn't matter, contract doesn't matter, they're not going to be a member of the Flames next year.
That would be kind of where you are.
The fifth to seventh,
yeah,
somewhere in there?
I wouldn't be.
Maybe a sweetener of a C-level prospect, something like that?
Definitely not a pick in the first three rounds would be what I would say.
Okay, so we're roughly on the same terms there.
Yeah. What do we got here on the text line at 960-960? Before I will play one more Frank Saravalli clip. Stewart asks, what would Rooney be worth to a playoff team? I don't think a ton. I don't think it would be completely worthless because teams are always looking for center ice depth. But I don't think you'd be getting a ton for that, which is why I'd be fine with them going to acquire somebody and keeping Rooney and having that as an option for you between now and whenever the season comes to an end.
I think in theory, and we heard Saravalli suggest that this might be a trade market that favors buyers versus sellers. If you're going to bring in a right shot center, I would be okay taking a late round pick for Rooney, shipping him somewhere else just to help offset the cost of what you're bringing in, to be perfectly honest with you. Now, can he fetch that? I don't know what the trade market is for Kevin Rooney. All I know is that typically centers, regardless of where you can slot up and down the lineup, are coveted on some level at the trade deadline.
Here's another interesting thing that we haven't talked about. This text comes in. Pat Conroy should be weaponizing his cap space for accumulating more assets at the deadline. What about that idea? Is there a quote-unquote bad contract that can still play that could end up helping the Flames? Like, and this would be more on the defense side of things, I think, but is there a bad contract that a team is looking to? And I haven't, because this text came in in the middle of the conversation, that idea is really interesting to me. Somebody that can play third pairing, you don't mind paying $4.5 million for the rest of the year because you got no cap worries. I wonder if there's that type of defenseman out there that you're not going to pay out like a future considerations deal, or maybe you get some type of sweetener to help a team. Something like that I'd be super interested in.
I would need the sweetener. I would need the kicker. I'm not doing anybody any financial favors for free, even if it does make my team a little bit better. I think you can squeeze some other organizations into, you know, whether it's a third, a fourth, a fifth, a sixth round pick in order to facilitate. The other thing I would look at too is simply brokering deals. If a team A and team B come to an agreement on a trade, but they need team C, the Calgary Flames, to come in and eat 25, 30, 50% of the contract to make the money work for the other two teams, 100% do that. As it stands right now, the Flames can do that two more times. They've done it with Markstrom and the Devils. They still have two more opportunities
to
do so.
Available.
I would 100% do that.
And then,
but it's not my money, to be perfect. At the end of the, it's not coming out of my wallet. So I don't know. if things change in that sense. But if you have the opportunity to, and you can add draft picks or you can add a prospect, whatever it is, I 100% do it.
This guy's from Bubba. Guys, just I love the show, but are you guys actually talking about one of Dellandrea, Lafferty, and Kunin? Really? These are the type of guys you go after when you're in it to win it, not a precipice playoff team. That's just my opinion, so I'd love to hear a retort. But a third and a fifth for those guys, rental or not, is a bit reckless. Get more assets. Don't trade more for Rooney or Schwint 2.0 for organizational depth. Sorry, guys, can't get there myself. You know, a 24-year-old like Dellandrea especially, I'd be okay with them trading something for that, especially because he is under contract next year and is under team control after that. That fits your age range. And I'm not suggesting you give up a ton for it, but if you can do it for something that is not a massive, massive price to pay and that would clearly be a quote-unquote overpay for the type of player we're talking about, I'd have no problem with that.
He fits your age range. He fits your need. He fits the dexterity, and he's almost 55% at the dot this season, so he checks almost every single box in terms of what you want to add up front. This is going to be semantics in me coming out. Third and a fifth for me might be a little too rich for my blood on Dellandrea, but if we're talking about moving a depth piece on your current roster and getting a late round pick and going fifth and seventh or two fifths or whatever it takes in that front, maybe a fourth and a sixth. Again, we're splitting hairs here in terms of 32 draft positions between what you'd give up and what I'd give up.
Yeah.
But that's sort of where but again, cost controlled, age range, under contract, checks everything that you'd want for your fourth line center at this point.
And just for because we did talk about this at length on Monday, this was Frank Saravalli with us on the first hour on this Tuesday when asked about the potential of the Flames going and looking at a guy like Rantanen and between now and the trade deadline.
Anytime you can get your hands on a difference maker, I think you have to at least try. That said, I don't know how compatible the Flames and Canes would be in terms of making a trade like that.
Yeah.
It's the same conundrum that we've gotten to with
Dylan Cousins.
Pick another guy on the list. And then the next part is, would Mikko Rantanen want to sign in Calgary? And that part I would have not doubt about, but
for sure.
You'd have to, I mean, it's a real question to ask. So it's not like the Flames could afford to give up real assets to have him walk at the end of the season anyway, which is part of the trepidation that I think a lot of other teams are going to have if the Canes get to a spot where they decide, okay, we've gotten a non-committal answer, not a no, but a non-committal answer from Mikko Rantanen. Do we have to make a move here? Can we rent him for the rest of the year and just, you know, have him walk to free agency? Are we okay with that? And then if you're shopping him, the teams are going to ask that exact question is, okay, so if Carolina has put a significant deal on the table and everyone I think is in agreement that that's been the case, why would we get a different result?
Yeah.
Is what teams would have to ask themselves.
So that's where things, and that's why when we were talking about it on Monday, like without a guarantee or pretty close to a guarantee that he was going to stay here, then, you know, it wouldn't make a lot of sense. If there's even a slight risk that that's going to be just a rental, you don't do it. You'd have to, and I know the Flames would only do it if there was a guarantee he'd sign there. So they're not going to go get Rantanen as a potential rental. We know that for sure.
He'd have to sign an extension before I'd let him on the charter back to Calgary if I were making that deal. Like, there can be no wiggle room. There can be no room for error if you're going to give up what it's going to take to acquire Rantanen before the deadline. And to be perfectly honest, and I've said this a couple of times now, I don't even think he necessarily fits with the Flames right now. He's not the player I would go big game hunting over, understanding that he's sixth in NHL scoring since the beginning of the, I think it's the 21-22 season or 2021 season, fifth in goals, third amongst wingers. Like, he's a top 10 forward, a top 5 winger, top 3 winger. I'm not disparaging Mikko Rantanen. He's a fantastic player. He's a difference maker. And like Saravalli said, if you have the opportunity, you've got to kick tires on him. but I just don't think it'll fit for where the Flames are right now in the retool.
Well, and I mean, here's the other thing. And somebody texts in, what about 50%, like retaining 50% on a Rantanen deal, like being the third party 100% broker
all day.
And that could also be a way, like if you're going to make a deal with somebody and also be a third party broker elsewhere, then you're not really losing anything from where you are potentially, right? Like you can recoup and add at the same time. You wonder, you could take a look at some of the teams right now that would be cup contenders, from Vegas to Florida to Carolina to the Kings, Tampa Bay, Dallas, Colorado, Edmonton, maybe not Edmonton, but yeah.
You wouldn't do that to help Edmonton.
No, but otherwise, there's going to be some teams looking for, definitely some teams looking for that type of, that they're going to need some teams that, or potentially to make a deal, they're going to need some help to retain salary, right?
Yeah. Now, the other flip side of that coin is there's more than a handful of teams in the same situation as the Flames that do have ample cap space. So I wonder if you're going to be competing against a few of those driving the price down. But at the end of the day, if it's all it's costing you literally is cap space, a couple dollars, make it happen.
Steinberg, Vickers, this hour of Flames Talk is underway. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's hockey station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
So we've got some interesting lineup notes for Tuesday's game in Washington. Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you as this hour of Flames Talk continues. And of course, we have to start with the goaltending decision. It is indeed Dan Vladar getting the start against the number one team in the East, number two overall, which nobody expected, right?
Like, no.
Not a single person was like, I bet you Vladar starts on Monday. This was head coach Ryan Huska Tuesday morning on the decision to go with Dan Vladar against the Caps.
We have a lot of games coming up, and we're going to need both goaltenders. So this was kind of one of the scheduled ones that we had from way back at the beginning of the year.
So I was rather surprised to see this one. But I know for me what has helped me get my head around it. I still don't know if it's the move I would have made myself, but I think the biggest reasoning for this is that both guys, they want to make sure both guys are remaining fresh and getting games in. And nothing has changed in that Dustin's going to see way more of the games in the final 26 than Vladar is. I think that we can all agree on. But if Vladar doesn't start in this game and they wait until the weekend for the second half of the back-to-back, then it's exactly a month between starts. It would be Feb 2nd to March 2nd between starts for Dan Vladar. And I know that everybody had the break in there, but I think that that is the main reason. If there was not a two-week break that they were still coming off of, and if Vladar hadn't been on the shelf since February 2nd, I don't know if they make this decision. So I think in the end, that's what it comes down to, is as much as I think Dustin Wolf is going to be the bulk starter between now and the end of the season, I also think that this is a move to make sure that they do keep both goaltenders fresh. I didn't expect it. Definitely a surprise, but that's kind of my read on the situation.
Didn't expect it. I'll stop short of saying shocked, but I will go very surprised.
I'm still shocked by it. I did not see it coming at all.
I understand the reasoning from Ryan Huska in the clip you just played, but I personally, Aaron Vickers, am not a fan of the reasoning for starting Vladar. If you're worried about the rust for Vladar, to me, get him in on Sunday against the San Jose Sharks, then knock the rust off in that game. And understanding that Wolf wouldn't have played in over 2 weeks at that point, and then you're giving him Washington coming out. But at the end of the day, this Calgary Flames team right now is all about doing whatever you can each and every night to come away with 2 points. It's not to knock rust off. It's not to do anything but stay competitive in that wild card chase. And to listen to that clip of Huska, and this was a scheduled start sort of thing, But also 3 days ago, Huska said that he'd start Wolf in 15 straight if they had to. And this is, obviously you're not going to do that with back-to-backs. Like, we all know how the season schedule has played out for the Flames, and it's been Vladar playing the second of back-to-backs every single time we've been there. So this isn't like we're shocked that Vladar is going to ever start at all again, but you just layer in the Flames need as many points as they can. They're on the toughest road trip of the season at this point, where we both concede that even being 500 or maybe 1 point north of 500 on points percentage coming back is a very successful road trip. Dustin Wolf, to me, gives you the best chance game in, game out to come away with 2 points and to kick off this gauntlet of a road trip on a positive note. Mm-hmm. And knowing that he started 20 of 26 games dating back to December 14th, this is a goalie you're ready to ride as your number one. I'm very surprised. Caught off guard, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And again, understanding the reasoning that you're going to use Vladar on this trip, so ideally you don't want him to go a full month without playing, but shocked. Yeah, I'll come around and say it. Shocked that this is a Vladar start and not a Wolf start.
Let me play devil's advocate. Yep. Because I hear what you're saying, because I also thought it would be five starts for Wolf and one for Vladar. Looks like it'll be 4-2. We'll see. Maybe it'll be 3-3. But there's still a bigger picture of a 26-game schedule here. Knowing that, is it worth it to try to make sure that both guys are at a... Because all of a sudden, you know, if Vladar doesn't play until Sunday and it's a month between games and he looks like a goalie that hasn't played in a month and you lose that game and you still lose the game with Wolf against Washington, but now getting Vladar in this game so that you're not having a guy that rusty when it's all said and done. I don't know. Like, the big picture, I can kind of see the reasoning, I guess, is what I would say.
My counterpoint would be you play Vladar against Washington and lose, and then you play Vladar against Carolina in the second of back-to-backs and lose. What have you gamed in that sort of sense? And it is interesting that there's 26 games remaining, because Wolf has started 20 of 26 since December 14th. There's only Blackwood and Vasilevsky that have started more over that same span. To me, there's no disputing who your number one goalie is for the Flames now until the end of the regular season. I mean, it'll still factor in performance. It's not as if suddenly you get 10 straight starts of Dustin Wolf with a sub-900 save percentage and he's still your undisputed number one. I'm not necessarily saying that, but they've shown over the course of the last 3 months who their clear number one is. And when you're kicking off the most important road trip of the season, to me, it's shocking that you're not doing it with your number one. Again, and I don't want to say it's the toughest test of the road trip, because you and I debated it on Flames Talk on Monday and we came up with three different answers, or four if you want to count the Montreal game back at Scotiabank Saddledome, which is kind of a continuation in a sense of that road trip. But kicking off the road trip on the right note is so crucial, so critical in the chase that they're in. I'm surprised it's not the guy that they've designated as their number one over the past 3 months that gets the nod.
What do we got on the text line at 960-960? This is from Biff. They're using Vladar against Washington because of his size. He can react to the flank one-timer shot that we all know is coming.
I would say Wolf is better at that.
And Wolf did a pretty good job on Ovechkin in the home game. This says Rust is BS. They're admitting defeat and keeping Wolf sheltered. That comes from John. This says maybe there's a trade brewing and the trade partner wants to see Vladar in action. This says maybe Wolf is sick, although I think they'd come out and tell us that if Wolf was sick. And this says the difference between 25 days and a month isn't that much time. 6 extra days won't stop Rust. So there you go on the text line at 960-960 on that decision. Kevin Ball returns to the lineup. Yes. He's missed the last 9-8 with an upper body injury, 1 with illness, but finally back in the lineup on Tuesday night in Washington.
You know, one in the last one, but, you know, is what it is. Caught something and, you know, ready to play.
I would imagine, you know, still the work, the practice week and everything, preparation, you know, felt like you were able to, you know, get the work in that you needed to feel ready to come back.
Yeah, no, for sure. It was a good week. It was like almost like a mini training camp week. So it was good to get those high end reps in with the guys. and excited to be back.
Some excitement for you? Do you feel that?
I'm excited. Yeah, it's crazy being out for that long. Right. That break kind of extends it and makes it a bit longer, but crazy.
So that's Kevin Ball as he returns to the lineup Tuesday night in Washington, and boy, do they need him. He moves right back onto that pairing with Rasmus Anderson. I think Raz needs him. I think the Flames need him. They need to have their blue line stretched a whole lot less thin, and by getting Ball back in, that's exactly what we're talking about.
Honestly, and not that I'm an expert on the New Jersey Devils. Far from it. See them once live, see them twice a season. I didn't realize when Conroy flipped Markstrom to New Jersey how instrumental Ball would be this quickly for the Calgary Flames. He's far and away your third best defenseman. No shame in being number three when Weegar and Anderson are ahead of you. Everybody just slots so much better with Ball in the lineup, and I think Anderson, even though I thought that pairing dipped a little bit at times over the course of the last couple of months, there's no doubt that Anderson is better when Ball is on his left side, and the impact on the team is significant as well. I don't think the record's a lie at all. Flames were 2-5-1 before the break without Ball. 3-5-1 if you count the San Jose game on Sunday where he was ready to come back, but again, illness got in the way. Even with that win against San Jose, they had a .389 points percentage with Ball missing. I don't think that's an accident. I think he is absolutely critical for that blue line, and what a time to get him back as we talk about this road trip being a massive test. Absolutely a great time to get that guy back.
It's funny, like Zeri's injury was more serious looking and he missed more time, and they definitely missed Zeri, but I do think they're a deeper group up front than they are on the blue line, and having a guy all year, they've had three top four defensemen, right? And so losing Ball, now you're down to two, and now all three pairings are playing with at least one guy, maybe a little over their head, right? And maybe not the third pairing, but both your top two pairings, both
your 23-minute a night pairs.
Exactly. Yeah. Half of your top four is playing way over their head. And getting Ball back means that at least one of your top two pairings is slotted right on both sides with Anderson and Ball. And look, I mean, I think Rasmus's game has fallen off a little bit over the last number of weeks. I haven't been as big on Raz's game.
Yep.
So getting him, his regular partner back, I don't think is going to hurt at all. So all those things combined, like, this is a massive return for the Flames. And I don't think you can overstate how big Ball's return is for this team.
I would agree that his impact or his absence was more significant for the Flames than Connor Zeri. And that, you know what a fan I've been of Connor Zeri this year. I think at times he's been their most dynamic forward prior to the injury, and we'll see how he responds from coming back and if he can get back to that level. But what you said is absolutely true about the Flames defense, where it's not blessed with depth to start with, and then you remove one of your top four defensemen when you only have three. You're asking a lot more of Weegar. You're asking a lot more of Anderson. You're asking a lot more of Hanley, Solovyov, whoever you've used, Bean, whoever you've used in a top four role. Suddenly you get Ball back. It bumps one defenseman down one spot, and it just makes you feel, from my perspective anyway, a lot more confident in each of the pairings that you're going to ice against, again, five of the six teams you're about to play over the course of the next week and a half all have aspirations for the Stanley Cup. You need this return, and it couldn't come at a better time.
Last thing I'd say, last point rather, I like the fact that Ilya Solovyov stays in. Jake Bean's game has been fine, not spectacular. I didn't love him against San Jose. Wasn't big on what we were seeing going into the break, and I'm not suggesting that Bean should be all of a sudden permanently out.
Right.
But, you know, Solovyov needs to play while he's up, and I think that they need to know what they've got in Solovyov, and I don't think so. Solovyov moves to the pair with Pahal, so it'll be Solo on the left and Pahal on the right. Bean comes out of the lineup. I don't think that the difference between Bean and Solovyov is all that large, and so another opportunity to get another look at Solovyov, another opportunity to see what you've got, I think can take precedence over having Ball in, because I don't think the difference on that pair is going to be large at all. I think it'll be probably negligible.
Well, from my perspective anyways, you're asked those defensemen, Ball and Soloviev, you're asking them to do different things when they're in the lineup. And for Soloviev, I've liked him in his little mini audition, to be perfectly honest. I'm not sure I'd want him slotted in a top pair role this early. But from what I've seen, he's been relatively quiet, for the most part invisible in good ways, because the style that he plays, if you're standing out, more often than not, it's because you've made a glaring error, not because you've made a spectacular play. And for a young defenseman that's just sort of starting to potentially find his way, averaging 19.24 of ice time is asking a lot. And I like dropping him to a pair with Pahal, and I'm not using this as a direct comparison, but I wonder if they can almost be a modern isn't the right word, but an updated Zadorov Gudbranson, where you're kind of got two guys that can bruise, that can stay at home. Priority one is the defensive end. Know what your job is. Play tough. Make life miserable for the other side. Don't get scored on. I'm actually, from how unspectacular you're going to ask them to play, I'm very curious to see how that pair meshes and what they're able to do, because, again, you're on the road too, so you don't get the benefit of last change. So that pairing might see a lot of the top two lines of the Washington Capitals when you're able to do that. I'll be curious to see how they hold their own.
Yeah, and I mean, the other big thing about keeping Soloviev, and he would have had this with Bean as well, but now with Ball back, you're left-right on every pairing.
Yep.
You don't have two righties playing together like you did with Miramanov and Weegar, or like what you've seen with even when Barry's been in and playing on his offside. This means you're left-right on all three pairings. And, hey, I don't know if Soloviev's going to be with the group the rest of the year, but you got to see what you have. And at some point, I think you probably got to see if it doesn't work with Soloviev and he does not solidify himself as a guy that needs to stay with the group, then you give Kuznetsov a chance. He would be the next guy up.
I think it's equally as important to see what Kuznetsov can be in a sample size of games, whether that's at the expense of Soloviev, whether that ends up happening to be at the expense of another defenseman, who knows? And your injuries can always play a factor in this as well. But I do think that at some point, whether it's 2 games, 3 games, 4 games, you do want to see what Kuznetsov can be at the NHL level as well, because everything that we've heard from the Wrangler side of things is he's been a standout for that group too.
And I do think is knocking on the door to being a recall, and not the time right now. They went. I do think now that we have an understanding of how all last week went, I think having Soloviev and Kuznetsov in those days in practice was an opportunity.
Yep.
Coaching staff would have known that Barry was going to go on waivers and was no longer going to be with the NHL squad. So see Kuznetsov, Soloviev, who's the guy that they trust the most. And that's why I think the both those guys got into practice, and they've gone with Soloviev for now. But that doesn't mean that Kuznetsov couldn't get an opportunity in the not so distant future.
Well, and even for Kuznetsov, just to familiarize himself with the Flames specifically, whether that's the coaching staff, whether that's the approach, so be it. And he'll have obviously some familiarity with Trent Cull, but just having that opportunity, even in just a practice setting, to get that much more comfortable if and when an actual recall comes, where you're probably going to get into games where practice time is probably going to be limited, to be quite honest, with how the schedule shapes up for the Flames. It's going to be a sprint for every team from now till the end of the regular season. I think that was sort of by design, getting him up so that you could familiarize yourself with him and he with the staff.
That'll wrap us up on this hour of Flames Talk. Aaron Vickers is on Twitter at AA Vickers. Thanks to Shan Virgie and Cam Hughes, our outstanding producers this hour. And this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.